And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines.
Are you obvious?
And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, unafeared. We made the wrong one. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Okay, we're back here on Declare Your Independence from the Love Bus. Now we just getting ready to pull out tonight, probably, and get down to Jay's, pick up some stuff, and heading west. But we still haven't got the studio thing done. So we're broadcasting on, which one am I doing? This one? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm not using the main mic. All right, we'll get the audio. That's what we'll work on today. We've been busy. Got some decals up, got some finished trim to do, got the steering column cover to put on, you know, the little teeny weeny get her done stuff. I wanted to get down to Jay's before it got dark tonight. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. So we'll see. It'll be day two at the most. We'll get out of here, but we got to get this studio thing all put back together because we've been on the road, from the road. You know, it's kind of like a George Carlin thing. You got to take a small version of your stuff to Hawaii. Then when you go over the next island, you take a smaller stuff. Then you go camping on the beach and smaller stuff. Now we're consolidating back and getting some stuff. All right, that's what we're going to do today. In the third hour, we got L. Neal Smith. He's a, you know, longtime libertarian from the 70s, a science fiction writer that was a big influence on me. You know, a lot of you guys may listen to this show, go to Freedom's Phoenix and so on, but L. Neal Smith, he was at a, you know, well, it was natural fit. You know, a lot of us activists in Arizona, you know, just gravitated toward, he had to say, no compromise. So he's going to come on. He's getting ill health as years go on. Time, you know, marches on us all. But I wanted to talk to him, you know, while we still can. You know, it's going to be because, man, he predicted all this stuff was coming. Here we are. Now, in the first hour and the second, we're going to go 2 hours with Eric Schein. Now, he's really big on administrative law. He was in the Coast Guard, went up against a man, started pulling threads and finding, hey, man, you know, justice. I don't think it means what you think it means. So he's been uncovering a lot of stuff. You start pulling threads, especially where the money goes, and Department of Homeland Security and the TSA, and the United States Coast Guard, and, you know, and this unconstitutional administrative state and martial law. You know, we'll get an update on his case and what's going on. Go to 4winds10.com. F-O-U-R-W-I-N-D-S, the number 10.com. And we'll have that all in the show notes. Okay, Eric, what are we going to talk about today?
Okay, first off, I'm not in the Coast Guard. I was never in the Coast Guard. I was a naval officer.
Okay, oh, Merchant Marine or something. You had a lot of information about the Coast Guard. Okay.
Yeah. Got special it. Program in the Merchant Marine. My time in service or working on board commercial merchant vessels counts for my naval commission. They want us on board merchant ships as an issue of not just civil defense, but national security. So that if, you know, push comes to shove, time of war, natural catastrophe, they can act naval commission while we're on board the ship.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. We're just trying to, you know, get your volume up.
Yeah, no worries. So I went to Kings Point, which is the United States Merchant Marine Academy. It's a federal military service academy akin to West Point, Annapolis, the Air Force Academy, which are all federal military service academies. Coast Guard Academy is supposed to be a police academy, a federal maritime police academy. and they've turned it into a branch of military now. Since the launching of the war in Iraq on March 3rd, the Coast Guard moved into the Department of Transportation, and on March 6th, they brought charges against me, and on March 18th, 2003, they launched the war in Iraq.
Okay.
So the thing I want to talk about, or one of the things is, because even with the Supreme Court nominee from President Trump, Amy Coney Barrett, first off, the thing that disturbed me about her is she's a Rhodes Scholar. Cecil Rhodes, you probably know of Cecil B. Rhodes, Rhodesia, De Beer Diamond Mines, tied to the Rothschilds and the, you know, British German crown. Cecil Rhodes started the Rhodes Scholarship. Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar, educated in London, and so was Amy Coney Barrett. And that was one thing that kind of shocked me or stood out. Besides that, they did talk about in her confirmation hearings about administrative law and, more importantly, Chevron deference. One thing that in my own situation where the Coast Guard brought charges against me as a civilian, and they're saying that they're a branch of military, they used eventually something called Chevron deference when it made its way to the Ninth Circuit. In these proceedings, they brought charges against me under administrative law. The Coast Guard, no branch of military is supposed to touch or be involved with administrative law. The Coast Guard had an exception in Title V, the Administrative Procedure Act, Federal Administrative Procedure Act, because it was a civil service. The okay. Coast Guard actually, the Title V was actually created specifically for the Coast Guard in 1947. And this is the time that a lot of other things went on after World War II. Not only the creation of the Department of Defense, the shuttering of the Department of War, the creation of Title X and the Uniform Code of Military Justice for the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps, but also putting the Coast Guard out. The Coast Guard was called the carpet by Congress and had to, a Captain Richmond from the Coast Guard appeared before Congress, and he had to admit, finally, eventually, after he was grilled by Congress, they were really upset with what was going on, where he had to admit on the record, the congressional record, that the Coast Guard is not a branch of military. They've done this a number of times since 1915 when they were formed, and they're even trying to trace their roots back to 1791, which is ludicrous. Nothing against federal service, nothing against the Coast Guard, nothing against life-saving, but even the British or English Coast Guard is a civil service. The Canadian Coast Guard is a civil service. Our own Coast Guard used to be a civil service, but they used the events that occurred on September 11th, 2001, 9/11, to eventually not only create the Office of Homeland Security with Tom Ridge and him walking around hat in hand waiting to take on his new job, but eventually in 2003, they took the Coast Guard from the Department of Transportation and moved it into the newly founded Department of Homeland Security that the Coast Guard was involved in. And they've been doing things like Admiral Lloyd, Admiral Allen, Admiral Collins, and others have turned the Homeland Security and the Coast Guard into a weapons procurement program. They have things like integrated Coast Guard systems that branched off of, was privatized, set up by these admirals in the Coast Guard. Admiral Lloyd was the one who started the, I think we talked about this last time, the Transportation Worker Identification Card, which is a precursor to, if not a prototype for a national real ID.
Hey, we're going into break. Let's go ahead and hold off. They can't hear well over, especially with your low volume. We'll see if we can fix that. When we come back here, Aaron Shine, we need to get an update of what's going on with this case and what the U.S. government's going to be doing. Maybe post-election, we'll find out when we come back.
reference how I came to know about
it. Let's go.
It's the Ernest Hancock Show, where we're going.
So go ahead and go.
There aren't any.
Yeah, we're back. Bring it up. Yeah, welcome back. Welcome back. All right. We've talked with Eric over the years, and what brought this up is that administrative law was brought up to Barrett, the nominee for the Supreme Court. And when she was queried about it, she had a response, and Eric's like, hey, you know, we need to understand this administrative law thing, and something Chevron deference, whatever the heck that is. So let's start off with the Chevron thing. You know, say it. Spell it. What is it? How does it pertain? Educate us. What's up?
Well, Chevron is the corporation, the oil company, C-H-E-V-R-O-N, Chevron. Deference is where the judiciary, our Article III judiciary, has to give deference to the executive branch Article II court system. To where our executive branch is carrying on administrative courts, making rules, which then become law. Our legislature is not writing or crafting the law. Fourth estate, these administrative or technocrats or bureaucrats or whatever you want to call them, personnel in all of these agencies. SEC is a perfect example. SEC was losing a lot of its cases in federal district court where it would bring charges against people, investigations, etc., and they were losing. So what they did was they started pulling all of their cases out of the judiciary, where things like probable cause, warrants, etc., all the protections that are in the Bill of Rights, due process, and more apply, to where in these administrative proceedings they do not apply. You don't have the right to counsel. You don't have they can go back and enforce a law or a rule that doesn't exist today and go back 5 years and enforce it. So there's no notice. There's no due process. These administrative court systems have gone so far astray. Our state constitutions and our federal constitutions were actually crafted to prevent administrative law from being used. It is a kingly law. It is a prerogative law. Lord Coke in England, under a constitutional monarchy, fought hard to not only...
Well, I thought it was in the Bill of Rights where it says, there shall be no ex post facto law.
Exactly. No, and that's what... And that's what they did.
Which means they retroactively... it's illegal now, so we're going to punish you for what you did.
That's why
they
did NDAA 2012, the National Defense Authorization Act, where Obama put in it and had in it to protect them. So it was legal. They were doing this because they had already done it. So they were passing rules, laws, whatever, in the NDAA 2012 to where they could grab any American citizen anywhere in the world, hold them in military detention in a military prison, no access to lawyers, no access to judges, no access to a trial, and they could hold them indefinitely. And this wasn't about terrorists in Iraq or Iran or the Middle East or anywhere in the world. This was about American citizens. This is about you and I. When they get away and do these kind of things, they're not targeting somebody overseas. And even if they are, that law that is used overseas can come back on us and be used against us. And it is. I mean, I believe strongly from everything that's happened that not only Bush knew about what went on with me, but so did Obama. And that was one of the reasons that what they did with me, what they did with Susan Lindauer and others, to where they prosecuted us. I had federal civil complaints in federal district court that they stepped on, the Coast Guard, a branch of military that I'm not in, have never been in, that's saying that I'm a civilian throughout these proceedings, and they're saying that they're a branch of military, stepped on my civil complaints in federal district court, pulled them out of federal district court, Article III judiciary, and then ruled upon them, carried on proceedings for
5 to 8 years, actually more, closer to 10 when you really look at things, if not 12 or 14. And they do this because justice denied is, or justice delayed is justice denied. And they're using, where the Coast Guard is using administrative law, a branch of military is administering civilian law, thus making civilian law. And this administrative law process is, they can make up whatever they want. Because, and this gets into Chevron deference, where Chevron deference is, I think, is a case from 1984, U.S. Supreme Court, where they ruled that an Article III judicial court cannot look at a matter that has been decided by an Article II court. So get that. Not just like a military tribunal, which is absurd. They actually had, and this is one of the case law that I brought forth in my own case, was the U.S. Supreme Court case of Reed versus Covert in 1956. They ruled that the prosecution of a woman, the wife of a U.S. service member in England, in a military tribunal was okay, was valid. The Solicitor General, who gets to decide when to defend the Constitution, the rule of law, and more at that time, advocated to the Attorney General, because her father had actually advocated to the Solicitor General, who then advocated to the Attorney General, that this law cannot stand, or this case precedence cannot stand. So in 1957, the same sitting of the same U.S. Supreme Court overturned themselves and ruled that, you know, A, military tribunal of a civilian is wrong. We don't do that. B, we're not supposed to have a competing system of courts under the executive branch. And yet we do today, to where agencies like the SEC and more, all these administrative agencies, are bringing charges and actions against Americans, American corporations, and more, to where it's not even under the rule of law, because they can make it up as they go. And that's how disturbing it is. And they Congress actually met and convened, and this is how unsettling this is and should be to most Americans, that Congress met and convened and decided that the name of the judges, and they're not judges because they're in the executive branch, Article II, they were called hearing officers because they're like a police commissioner. They're supposed to take evidence, make a record of it, and move on. Same thing like what happened with the 9/11 Commission report and more. Instead, people didn't respect the name of hearing officer, I guess. So Congress met and convened and actually had a administrative law judge from the banking industry appear before them. They discussed all of this, and they changed the name of these Article II police commissioners, they were called hearing officers, into administrative law judges, so that people would respect them more, think that they were real judges. They're wearing black robes in these proceedings.
Okay, now, we're going into break. We'll detail this a little bit more. I need to understand it. I'm sure the audience needs to understand it, because this is what, we go into martial law, or they, you know, do quarantine, or they do something, you know, it's going to be, but I have rights. Yeah, maybe you don't. So we're going to find out. But they did ask Barrett this in the confirmation hearings, and I'm interested in what she had to say about it. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Yeah, we're almost there. We're almost there. Getting everything all hooked up. Finished 35 today. Yeah, because tomorrow night we have an IPFS show. James Corbett and I do with a talk show host in Australia. And they saw our thing on IP, and they went, whoa! And yesterday, Derek and I did a podcast, vlog, whatever you call it, with a young man in Switzerland. And so they're getting ready to set the protocols and the formatting for standardizing search on IPFS. They're going to be starting that. You know, the snow starts flying, and Derek's in front of his computer, so, you know, they'll have some fun with that. And this is making progress. There's, you know, how long did it take you? I don't know, a week and 3 years. You know, you get everything all ready, and then all of a sudden, within 2 weeks, man, everybody wants to be your buddy. So we're working on that. Now, Eric Schein has personal experience. He's a merchant marine, I guess is the right term. And there was some government projects, the United States Coast Guard, and doing on some ships. And years ago, we had him come on and talk about, you know, just corruption and when he wanted to highlight or whistleblow or, you know, what was going on. Then he came up against administrative law. Now, administrative law, I've been, you know, through this before in our activism and so on. They just kind of make up a law, and you don't really go to court. You go to some administrative judge. And I'm going, administrative judge, what the hell is that? You know, how are you? Well, then once they do stuff and enact and get you to comply, well, then it becomes like law. That's the way we do it, you know. And this was brought up to and he, you know, cites some cases and so on about, you know, how and where they do that and is and isn't constitutional and all that stuff. But the – and what is the standing on that? If I were to go shepherdize this, you know, look at past precedents and cases and so on, they're going, yeah, administrative law is the law of the land and the king says. You know, what's its status now?
The king says. I mean, that's it. You nailed it on the head, because Wilson, President Wilson, we talked about this before – he went to Prussia, which took over German federations, German republics, basically created a more modern day Greater Germania, much like the United States of America, in bringing together that region under one helm. Bismarck was, involved in this. Bismarck was running Prussia for the crown, that crown. He was instrumental in marrying Austria, Bavaria, the German federations, German republics, Prussia, all into one before Hitler came onto the scene. This is the late 1800s or so. But President Wilson, and one reason he became president, he went over to Prussia, studied administrative law, which was the, you know, law du jour at the time. 80% of all the laws that are here in the United States came from Europe. The majority of those were made under military rule, which is what they're doing now. They're using our executive branch, which is not the legislature. The executive branch is making rules that then become law. That's why they call them rulers, because they're not.
Okay, now is this what, you know, when they do an executive order to give that some kind of a clout?
They're supposed to have no weight at all. And this is a really good book on this. It's not a primer. It's kind of like advanced reading, but he does have a primer called The Administrative Threat. It's by Columbia Law Professor Philip Homburger. But he has a more in-depth book called Is Administrative Law Unlawful? And this is a Columbia University law professor, Ivy League. And he's saying, yes, it's unlawful. And he gives the reasons why and walks you through history about our state constitutions and federal constitutions and how they were constructed in such a way to prevent this, so that administrative law could not be used here.
Okay, let me give you an example. During this lockdown and so on, and you'll have, a really good example, Michigan. Michigan has passed, I don't know, decades ago, a emergency act. If I got an emergency, I'm governor, do emergency. It goes to the Supreme Court in the state of Michigan. It's a state law, a state constitutional challenge. The federal government doesn't have any jurisdiction. They can't appeal it up, and it had nothing to do with nothing federal, nothing. It's just Michigan. Now, of course, they'll try, but, you know, it's supposed to not.
Right.
So then you have someone challenged it. They go to the Supreme Court, and it was 7-0 saying that she unconstitutionally used that law that gave her this power. She did it wrong. She, you know, 7-0 and 4-3 against the law itself. Now it's declared that the law that gave her, said it gave her this power to do this emergency, whatever, was unconstitutional against Michigan's state constitution. So of course they don't like it. So what do? They go down to the county level, some county, you know, commissioner, health guy of county administrative law. We're going to do it anyway. So this is exactly what you're talking about. Now you have executive order from the governor or some county level of we rule you and you got to do it anyway.
But it goes to compliance. Like if you go into a traffic court, say you get a ticket and you pay the ticket. Well, guess what? You just set precedence because you did not fight or combat it, especially if it's an unlawful rule or law that's been constructed. If you give up, and most people don't realize, and I just ran into this yesterday, I had a couple parking tickets. They shut down the whole parking ticket program because of COVID-19. They started up again. They gave no notice. So a lot of people got a bunch of parking tickets. I spoke with the parking enforcement agency, and I said, I want to get before an Article 3 judge to have this heard. And they said, no, you can't do that. That's step three. So you have to go through step one and step two under the executive branch, the police themselves, a police commissioner. When you see that term commissioner on the bench up there and they're wearing black robes, guess what? It's not a real judge. He's a commissioner in the law enforcement branch, in the executive branch, deciding your case for you. And if you don't know any better, like if you go in, put your hand up, swear in, like most people do, like cattle, they get everybody to swear in at the same time, and then they go ahead and, you know, hold hearings. That guy is not a judge. He's not an Article 3 judge. But if you have your wits about you and say, no, I want to get before an Article 3 judge. I did not swear in with everybody else. You're not in that, you know, anything that you say can and will be used against you or whatever. And you can get before an Article 3 judge, but you're going to have to wait. So they make it inconvenient. But that's the level of stuff. They're trying to make everything, even at a federal level, even when it involves your life and liberty and, like for me, my Naval Commission and my Marine Engineer's license and more, my career, they're putting you before a police commissioner. And that means that we are and have been, and Ron Paul was a big advocate about this, about taking us off of the Emergency Powers and War Powers Act that we've been on since effectively World War II.
Okay.
And then go before that.
Well, let me ask some questions here before we hit the break. We're looking at a mechanism and an infrastructure that's there to do all this stuff to us. And I'm going, when did it start? How is it allowed to prevail? And if you go to the Michigan example to where you got some local official saying, nope, you got to comply because I'm shiny badge commissioner of police action of we're going to shoot you if you don't kind of thing, you know, and you go, I think I'll decline. Well, I want to appeal it up. If they challenge administrative law itself, the bad guys that use it aren't going to dig that too much, are they? We lost him. Well, we come back. We'll get him explain that to us because that's one of the things that I'm really interested in because this administrative law I came across this several times during my activism, and it was my son. They wanted him. He had to go in the draft or get a learner permit to drive or something. I'm like, what? I want to challenge this. Oh, administrative. Well, I could have gone deeper.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied.
Covering the secrets and exposing the lies. All right. Let's get the relevance of this thing. You know, because Eric, he's got a lot of history. He wants to share a lot of stuff and explain it to you. But, I get how it applies. Now, this is what's going on. The state of Michigan, Governor Whitmer or whatever, we got some interesting signs that we did, and we're going to be delivering those on our way west. Ha, ha, ha. Now, what we witnessed was there was a law given emergency power, which is all this administrative law, and we got the power, and I have the power, and we got the power. And they keep adding all these layers on, and a lot of people don't realize it's at the county level. Now, counties are supposed to be political subdivisions of the state. They're like, enactors, just administrators, okay, of state whatever on the county level. Well, What happens is during the mid-90s, there was an effort to try and have a new layer of legislators that would legislate at the county level. They wanted a local fiefdom government of Providence, province of China, whatever the hell they were trying to do. And I witnessed this, what they were when they were trying to do this. And I'm going, what the heck is going on? Then we get this administrative law thing. Well, administrative law starts with, you know, Wilson goes in the teens or late, you know, the aughts of 1900 or whatever, goes to Prussia, you know, studies there how we're going to rule. Well, Rockefellers and Rothschilds and all them, the secret handshake club, man, they, ooh, yeah, we want to get this going and Wilson to do it for us. And, oh, yeah, we're going to stay out of the war. We're not going to get in the war. And war. Of course, we go into World War One, and that World War One conspiracy, you can watch James Corbett and tell you all about it. Then you go into the League of Nations. They're wanting to have all of the Federal Reserve, the IRS. Well, they need, you know, people going around saying, I got rights and Constitution, going to court and everything. Yeah, that's just in the way. We got to have some administrative law. We got to have some way we can rule correctly. And, you know, Wilson knows how to do it. He went to Prussia. All right? They got the school system there. That's John Taylor Gatto's going on. First, you got to convince people that that's the way it's supposed to be done. All right? So this is what we come to now. Now we have the manifestation of this right now when they do the COVID thing. And all of a sudden, you got these governors and so on, the edicts of power. Well, they got President Trump to declare a national emergency, which triggers a whole bunch of stuff in the states. You know, I don't know if he really realized the second he did that, they go, we get to play now. He declared emergency. We got emergency. We're going to emergencize everything. So that triggers these declarations of emergency. In Michigan, they had one of these laws in there for however long. And she goes, yep, by that law, I declare, and you have to, and you got to, because I can't. Well, they challenged it. It goes to the Supreme Court in Michigan, and he said 7-0, that law that was there for her to do that, she violated. She did it wrong. She did it too long. She did it without proper authorization, or blah, blah, blah. And they also challenged the law itself. And the law was struck down 4-3, okay? Well, then you always hear about from her about 4-3. It was only 4-3. And if you, yeah, only 4-3 on the freaking law itself. 7-0 against you how you used it. So that's gone. Now you have the county guys, and I was talking to Rick Kerp, you know, one of the activists doing signs in west of Detroit out there in the rural areas, and he said, look, I get letters from the county guys. They're sending, they're going, no, we rule you, and we're the ruler and the administrative law of ruling, and you're still not allowed, and the restaurants have to, and you got, well, they're saying, you know, the lawyers that did this case in the Supreme Court, throw your mask away. Nope, nope, nope. We got administrative law. Really? What the hell is that? And then what the hell does your other courts even mean? Okay? So this is how it's going to be done. And they're doing it. Well, Eric understands it. He's not that great at explaining it. But, you know, we have. So this Chevron deference thing has a reference to whether this is or is not lawful. It's a precedent of something. And I need to have that explained. You got like 4 minutes in this segment to explain to me the Chevron case and how it applies to whether it's legal or not to do this administrative law.
This gets into the unitary executive that Bush pushed and a bunch more to where the executive branch has executive, legislative, and judicial powers. So that basically all three branches of the government, and this is one thing that Cheney, this is one thing that Cheney pushed, was to bring back the power to the executive to where it's the executive is now beyond a king. I mean, they can literally take people off the street and imprison them in military prisons without right to trial, without right to access to courts, without right to an attorney and more. But Chevron deference shores up this unitary executive to where if you are brought before a court in the executive branch, the Social Security Administration, the STC, the FEC, the FCC, et cetera, all these alphabet agencies that Roosevelt did a lot to set up, you know, prior to and in the midst of World War II, and that's been taken over and that Congress has really pushed to where if you go before one of these courts, you cannot go into the Article III judiciary. You are barred under Chevron deference from having any judicial oversight on what the executive branch has done to you. or the law that they
use. So the Chevron case goes to what? The U.S. Supreme Court?
Yes.
U.S. Supreme Court said, yeah, we like administrative law, and if you get adjudicated there, you can't come to... Well, what did it say? I don't understand what you mean.
You have to defer to the administrative agency who's an expert on the industry or the law or the administration of the law in this particular industry, whether it be Silicon Valley, the tech giants, and more.
So freedom's not the answer to any question. It's some administrative expert, the scientist rule. You know, we know better.
What's kind of disturbing, yes, and what's kind of disturbing about this, and this gets into the technocracy and the bureaucracy and this fourth estate that's actually making our laws for us, and if you get caught up and come under one of these laws, you can't challenge it. You can't challenge it. That's exactly what they did to me, to where I'm coming under administrative law being administered by a branch of military that I'm not in, and the Ninth Circuit ruled, oh, we can't rule on this because of Chevron deference, but we're going to put out a 5-page ruling anyways, although it's not a ruling, and in it, we're going to put a footnote that says, even though you're a civilian, the Coast Guard can use military rules of evidence to get your medical records. Think about that. Think about that. Under administrative law, and then they can't look at it. So they
recognize... So before we finish the hour, we got a minute. You know, this issue was brought up to Barrett in confirmation hearings for Supreme Court. How? What was the question?
About administrative law and Chevron deference.
Yeah, well, who brought that up?
One of the senators that were...
Republican, Democrat, and why would they even bring it up?
Offhand. It shocked me that they were actually talking about and admitting... about administrative law.
Yeah, somebody slipped them a piece of paper to even ask. I mean, who's that?
They're all part of the party. They're the ones, like I told you, Congress met and convened and changed the names of these hearing officers to administrative law judges so that we would buy that they're judges, and they're not. They're police commissioners.
Okay, no, time out. I need to understand. You know, did some aide or constituent slip them a piece of paper, ask her about this? Did he know what was going on? How was the question framed? What was her answer?
They were discussed. I caught it, and you know, I didn't watch the whole thing, but the part that I saw was where they in the Senate, they're actually talking about administrative law, and they're talking about, it's not just Chevron deference. There's other deferences that are Supreme Court case precedents to where the judiciary, the federal district courts, the circuit appellate courts. I mean, think about the chain that I went through myself to where I'm not in the Coast Guard, never been in the Coast Guard. I'm a naval officer and an officer in the Merchant Marine, federal maritime officer. Admiralty law, general maritime law is supposed to apply. They brought charges against me, stepped on formal civil complaints in the federal district court, violation of First Amendment. And then in the end, after they hold on to me for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I have to appeal to the Coast Guard commandant, the head of a branch of military that I'm not in. Then I have to appeal to the NTSB.
Okay, we're going into this hour. We're going to another hour with Eric. And now we're going to, you know, I don't know anybody that understands this better than Eric. It's just I got to extract it. So I'm going to have a bunch of questions. You know, I want to know where the authority and what levels. Is this, you know, down to the municipal level, county, state, federal? Who recognizes it? Why do they recognize it? When did that happen? And if for them to ask a Supreme Court justice about this very thing, they're worried one way or the other. She's either not going to support it or she is going to support it. You know, I need to know what. You know, this is how we're going to get ruled. You want to know, you know, Bob put in the telegram, he goes, yeah, this is probably where your occupancy permit thing comes from. And I'm going, you know, we're going to find out. We're going to find out. Eric Chine's going to help us. We're at bat.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock. So
believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Here in Bangor, Maine, it'll probably be the last day, if not today, certainly tomorrow, that we are going to be heading south and west. You know, we go to New Hampshire, then we got to, you know, make a stop in Virgins, Vermont. I know you're out there, Matt. You know, we'll get by and at least, you know, wave as we go by and drop off some stencils and so on. Then we got to get to Michigan and say, yo, what's up? And then we got to get to Pacific Northwest, Washington State, and we're going to base out of there for a few weeks. And then we get to Thanksgiving with our family in Arizona. And then we got a bunch of Arizona activism because they are in want of doing some butt whipping. Now, one of the things that is one of the big reasons why I'm interested in this is because I'm looking at, if it pleases the crown, can I occupy my own land? And they go, nah, not without our permission slip. When did that happen? How did that happen? You know, I'm just going, when, you know, at what point did we get this? I got to have a permission slip in order to be able to live on my land. You know, I, of course, building permits and this and that. And so I'm going, all right, well, when did that happen? Who enforces that? How did it not be my property? When did that happen? Well, you have, and we'll recap real quick, you have Wilson goes to Prussia and finds out about administrative law and how we're going to rule with these laws and so on. Then, of course, you got to, you know, brainwash the kids. And John Taylor Gatto explained that to us. You know, our model now is, you know, the bells every hour or so and kind of, you know, it's just
school.
Yeah, it's schooling. So this is part of, so this COVID thing, they do away with school. Oh, you want school now as a babysitter? How about I don't? You know, how about I just decided, you know, you can suck it and I don't need it anymore. So then he gets to become president because, you know, they, them, those secret handshake people want Wilson in there. He does the, you know, the League of Nations, which is the precursor to United Nations. That didn't work out that well. But they did get, you know, Jekyll Island, and they got Federal Reserve and income tax and all this other stuff. Well, they wanted to have the ability to administer and force and regulate and all that. And then you come into FDR and they, you know, and if you won't do it, well, I'll just stack the court and we'll just have 12 justices. I'll just get my guys in. That, you know, that was a threat back then, which is what Biden Harris are talking about doing now, which, you know, they will. They can't. Because if they got a Trump, you know, did a threefer, he's got three up there. Oh, hell no. Well, we got, you know, three more that we just did. You know, so this is, you know, important because it evolved somehow into somebody making a command and all of a sudden it's law without going through your representatives and the legislature and it being susceptible to the court system. You know, when did that happen? You know, I need to understand this. So then we get, just a moment, that we get to the Michigan thing to where one of these laws under emergency, when the federal government, somebody declares emergency, got emergency powers of emergency, and they abuse it. And go. And I remember Mark J. Victor, attorneysforfreedom.com in Arizona, has a law firm in Honolulu also, and he sued the governor there for them violating this. He was unsuccessful for whatever reason, but in Michigan, they were successful. And it said the law, 7-0 on the Supreme Court, said she did it wrong, and 4-3 said that law shouldn't even exist. It was unconstitutional, and it's not challengeable to the federal court system because it was Michigan law, Michigan Constitution, Michigan, Michigan, Michigan. So now we're setting with this administrative ability. They asked Barrett in a confirmation hearing, and they say, hey, what's your position on this administrative law thing? Well, what did she even say? Do you remember?
She kind of bowed out on, you know, answering anything, emphatically. What bothered me or just set me back was that they were actually discussing administrative law and Chevron deference in these Senate proceedings. So the Senate's very aware of Chevron deference. They're very aware of the administration has created it. In 1947, after World War II, they created the Federal Administrative Procedure Act. And that was actually created for the Coast Guard, because the Coast Guard kept trying to say it was a branch of military and coming up with its own codes of conduct, military codes of conduct, and administering civilian affairs. They shut down Department of War, created Department of Defense, put all four real branches of the military under Title 10. That is basically the Department of Defense and contains the four branches there, and put them under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. They took the Coast Guard and put it under Title 14 as a federal civil service police and regulatory agency, and it created Title 5, or the Administrative Procedure Act, to protect the due process rights of Coast Guard personnel. Now that law is everywhere, in everything. So not only did the Coast Guard try to say it was a branch of military from 1915 to 1947 and create all kinds of problems where the Department of War was shut down because of the Geneva Conventions, outlawing aggressive wars or going across or doing anything other than protecting your own borders, the Department of Defense was created for that, and our four real branches of let me finish this. It's important. Posse Comitatus, the Act of 1878 by Congress, was incorporated into the Uniform Code of Military Justice so that no branch of military could be used to impose itself upon our civilian population. And yet, the Coast Guard has used administrative law, and this is how dangerous it is. It's used administrative law to redefine itself from a civil service agency into a branch of military that can administer and promulgate civilian law, adjudicate, regulate, police.
Okay, civilian law that they create under administrative whatever the heck, or some civilian
Title 5
law?
APA.
So they got their own law?
Courts. They have their own courts. They make their own law in these courts. They're rulemaking courts.
Okay, this is the question that, you know...
Wait, I want to read the one thing on Chevron deference that I was going to go to.
Well, you got 90 seconds.
Chevron USA, Inc. versus Natural Resources Defense Council, Inc. Chevron USA, Inc. versus Resources Defense Council, Inc. 46 USC 837 was a landmark case in which the United States Supreme Court set forth the legal test for determining whether to grant deference to a government agency's interpretation of a statute which it administers, like ministers from England and UK, ministries, the Ministry of Defense, etc., etc.
Okay. What's that test?
So in it, and it, this gets into the I'm trying to think of a proper term for it, but how well the agency knows or understands. They shouldn't even be doing this. They shouldn't be making rules.
Who makes that decision? They're the expert, says what? He's got a Dr. Fauci in front of his name? What does that mean?
You can't go into an Article 3 judiciary or judicial proceeding and challenge the rule. So they can make up a rule and you have no recourse. That's tyrant. That's kingdom. That's not our country.
Yeah, you know, just like the Department of Defense, it was Department of War, and then it's Department of Defense because some international said you're using the wrong word. I mean, you know what? And then of course they start waging war everywhere in the name of defense. That don't mean anything.
Well, no, but a war of invasion.
Okay, we're going into break. We can discuss this and get the details on this. Start to get interesting. You know, we're finding out, man, if it's administrative law, if that's what can be challenged, okay.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And Eric Schein. Now, we're trying to get down and drill down to the... I knew he'd be... needing 2 hours to get to it, skip to the end. Because, you know, he has a lot of personal investment in this. I just found out off air that he did a a role, a speaking part in Space Force with Steve Carell as General Rand of blah, 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 blah. So you catch him there. That's why he's all shaved and purdy now. He couldn't be all scruffy for the movie. But
it was actually a film, Space Force, not the TV series.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not out, is it? It's not out yet, is it?
No, no.
Oh, when's that come?
Like a month ago or so.
Well, when's that come out?
Sometime later this year.
Oh, I thought it was a TV pro. Oh, that's a feature film.
Yeah. It's a film, yeah.
Well, has it got big actors and stuff?
There's some known people in it.
All right, cool, cool. Space Force, got to do it. That's almost. I'm waiting for Trump, the movie. That'll be interesting. All right.
Yeah. They already have some out, don't they?
Now, the you read the administration. I need to know how this creeped in to our country. You know, this is administrative law. Once they get the concept, where was the concept first applied? It was certainly, I guess, federal. Okay, so Coast Guard. You know, and that's how you
created it specifically for the Coast Guard.
Well, when did it go to the state, and when did it go to the counties, and when did it, they go, ooh, we like this ruling thing.
Shortly thereafter, all the states started taking it on and creating their own state administrative law, which was modeled off of the federal. The attorney general got involved in this. Like, in my proceedings, they said that the federal rules of civil procedure don't apply. They kept saying it was a civil procedure and not criminal, but they put a bolo out on me saying that I might be dangerous. That's something that you do in a criminal proceeding. They you have no standing. Like, I could not defend myself. I did not get to testify in my own defense. I had no discovery from the Coast Guard about emails. We got some of them through FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, where they were clearly trying to frame me, and we have this in emails. I could not present that to the court because it's their own little court where they're the judge, they're the prosecutor.
Okay, describe it. You guys keep throwing out letters, man. BOLO stands for what?
Be on the lookout. They put them out on terrorists.
Well, you're challenging their authority.
They tried to tie me to Timothy McVeigh.
Really?
They did stuff like, no, they did far worse to me than they did to Richard Jewell. Trust me.
Well, they didn't. Worse. So, but they didn't say that, you know, you're a Russian agent. Russia did it.
You should see. You can find this online where the Department of Homeland Security put out a 50-page report saying every that I'm infested.
Yeah.
With
now that's not even news anymore. They get somebody, you really start to hit them. They don't like it. And here's just a guy. You know, that had a, you know, something to, you know, some corruption in the contract of kind of, no, man, here it come. And he's going, whoa, 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 what the hell is going on? And that's how you came across. You know, it's always some thread somebody pulls and you find all this stuff. I went through my, you know, revelation, but I didn't focus. See, Eric does what a lot of people do. Whether it's good or bad is not even the point. They get a lot of knowledge on one thing and they just go, yeah, I'm going to drill down on this one thing. For me, I'm like, it was economics, international trade, and then I'm going, how did they get away with this? It was election law. You know, how they control, you know, you can choose from communist candidate A or fascist candidate B, and how they control general public opinion, then you get in the media. And for me, it was an overall, there's something else behind all of this. These are just tentacles that lead to a central core of something, somebody's secret handshake club of we rule you. Well, it's they, them, those. You know, these families of kind of, you can go on and on how conspiratorial you can get. But there's a mechanism that they're using to get what they want. It's this administrative law thing is what Eric is saying. He's going, they have to have a mechanism by which they can put their expert that can make you do it. So when you get to COVID and we got a vaccine and there's going to be Dr. Fauci, but I mandate, it doesn't matter what Trump says. You know,
in these proceedings, they were trying to force me under a psych exam as part of the licensing testing procedures or whatever. I went with an attorney and a videographer. The psychiatrist in the state court down in San Diego would not go forward if my attorney was there or if it was recorded.
Of course not.
Wait. We left and did not go through with it. They weighted that evidence or the lack of that evidence against me. The Coast Guard did. But the psychiatrist was interviewed by my attorney, who was forced upon me by the pre-existing defendants from federal district court. We have legal aid under a bunch of different federal programs and stuff as federal maritime officers. He thought I was in the Coast Guard. So if I go in and talk to this guy and I talk about the Navy and the Merchant Marine and Kings Point or whatever, and he thinks I'm in the Coast Guard, he's going to think I, you know, popped a wire.
Why? What difference does that make?
What do you mean?
That whether you were in the Coast Guard or not.
Because you're in the wrong service, and they're saying that, you know, this guy thinks I'm in the Coast Guard. And it goes to, you know, some of these requirements where, you know, the Navy does the Navy under military and UCMJ. Marine Corps comes under the Navy because it's still part of the Navy. Army does the Army. Air Force does the Air Force. Civilians do civilians. The Coast Guard is saying it's a branch of military that can administer and promulgate civilian law.
Okay, so
you have
a
branch of military making law.
Okay, no, I want to, you know, separate this out so people understand.
Using
this
administrative law.
Let me ask a question. In the first, when we first started talking 2 years ago about this, this was your concern. Your concern is that, you know, all of a sudden you discovered that the Coast Guard is its own. That was where the martial law would come from, or it would be, you know, the administrator. They got their own law that they do through the administration of, you know, they do the NDAA and detain and kind of, you know, and how do you buffer yourself against that? And it's the Coast Guard.
They use the Coast Guard to move military law into Homeland Security.
Okay, and that's what it. My next point is that they're going to take the the Coast Guard that has these kind of special right, you know, abilities and so on, and they wanted that to make their muscle for Department of Homeland Security.
They've also set precedents so that now the Coast Guard can use administrative law to turn itself and redefine itself into a branch of military from the civil service. The Coast Guard wasn't in the Department of Defense prior to 9/11. It was in the Department of Transportation. You don't get branches of the military in the Department of Transportation. Before that, it was in Commerce. Before that, it was in Treasury. They're trying to date their foundings all the way back to Hamilton, who started the Revenue Cutter Marine that was shut down by Jefferson and his contemporaries because they didn't want a federal centralized constabulary or federal police department. And now that's what the Department of Homeland Security is. It's
Army.
A federal Stasi, United States of America, federal police department that has all the police departments from all the different federal agencies in one, in it, and they've set up these fusion centers that are listening centers for local areas where city, state, local, tribal, and state and federal.
We're going into break. We're going into break. But you can see how this is starting to get to where, you know, how is the Department of Homeland Security going to enforce all this curfew, mandate, martial law, whatever, and we got administrative, might it be the Coast Guard that they put in the Department of Homeland Security, you know, because they need to?
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Eric Schein. Okay, freedom's the answer. What's the question? It's fine. We get a question and get some more freedom. Here we have, I'm interested in this because I'm going, all right, where is it that they are given this jurisdiction? We have the mechanism by which you think Homeland Security is going to be able to use the Coast Guard's ability to just freaking create their own administrative law of martial because, okay? And if they're not going to do it, they'll create something else to do it because they can do it. Okay? If I don't know. Can they? Well, then they are, all right?
Who controls Plum Island?
All right. You're going to go down a rabbit hole, Plum Island. What's Plum Island?
Let's not waste a lot of time on side tangent stuff. Skip to the end. It's the highest level of research laboratory in the United States, something akin to weapons lab that is controlled by the Coast Guard and Department of Homeland Security. It was taken over by them. Look into Google Plum Island, and you'll be amazed at what they've taken over with the Department of Homeland Security.
See, I'm not worried about what they're going to take over. They're going to take over everything. I want to know how. You know, the how is...
Administrative law.
Okay, administrative law. Now, the administrative law, has it been challenged before? Now, that's what you say in the Chevron deference thing. You go, yeah, well, the experts, and they do, and they are the administrative, you know, enforcement of the FCC, FEC, the SEC, the whatever C's, and we're going to let them do it because I don't want to do it because we don't want to do it, all right? So I'm going, oh, I don't think you should be doing anything. You know, let it go and let the free market decide, and you guys are crooks, and I don't do them, and all this stuff and all these agencies just protect their buzzies anyway. So, you know, their buddies get to do whatever the hell they want, and it is legal. Just like, you know, nobody goes to jail for all this kind of crap. Why? Because administrative law, they did a decree and a guy signed a piece of paper, and we're all covered and nobody goes to jail. I was just following orders, blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, the rights of the individual does not enter into this. They specifically don't want it to. So when the martial law comes, if, you know, Biden gets in there and
that's what you don't understand. We're already under martial law.
Yeah, no, Trudeau is doing it right now.
Branch.
Trudeau is setting up concentration camps right now for those that don't comply. I got, you know, a talk show host on major cable news saying that, you know, any supporter of Trump needs to be rounded up and blah, 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 blah. Professors talking. I mean, this is how this is building up. Yeah, that don't mean anything. But how? How are they going to do it? Administrative law. So I need
executive order.
Which, you know, and be enforced by administrators. So I'm sitting there, I'm going, okay, so they do this. The challenge is what? How do you challenge it? Where do you challenge it? Has it been challenged before?
Because of Chevron deference, and there are more deferences to where the judiciary, or Article III judiciary, has to give deference or basically allow the administrative agency to do whatever they want.
So this question to Barrett, you know, do you think it may have been, hey, we need somebody to help us, you know, fix this administrative law thing, or we need to keep it?
And that's where, because even the administrative law should not exist. It's anti-constitutional. It's violating the separation of powers, where you have the executive branch, the military, the police.
I get all that. We talked about that. I'm just, the fact that somebody even asked the question means that it means something. I got a confirmation hearing to a Supreme Court justice case, and a congressman or senator gets up and says, "You know, what do you think about administrative law? You know, wait while I put on my lipstick." I mean, she had to say something.
Yes.
What'd she say?
And like in many of her answers, she said, "I cannot comment on." But one of the reasons why there's been a recent Supreme Court ruling involving administrative law, which chipped away a little bit at the Chevron deference, to where individuals have more of a right of action to get into a court, we're being barred from our court system. But I mean, that should just like astound people.
Well, I mean, is that the question they have in the case? Hey, I shouldn't be denied, blah, 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 blah. Instead of just challenging it from the beginning, like what was done in Michigan. Michigan goes, not only do we say she violated the law sucks. So I'm going, This administrative law sucks.
Exactly.
So where's that one?
Well, it's not just the it's not just at state level, but federal. It is being challenged. The administrative law was not only created for the Coast Guard for internal due process and to protect them and their rights under as Coast Guard personnel, federal civil service. It's been spread out to where, like the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, instead of going into court and going after somebody like Martha Stewart for a violation, they're doing it under administrative law, where they can get away with anything. They can deny you the right to discovery. There's no probable cause. There's no warrants. They seized my medical records. There's nothing in there. Where administrative law judge went out and got him himself, and he's not supposed to do that. He's supposed to go to an Article III judge. So these guys are doing whatever they want under administrative law, and the law should not exist. Columbia law professor Philip Homburger makes it very clear in his book, and he goes back to where, like, even Hamilton tried to use and create the Treasury, you know, the revenue cutter Marine under an executive order. And executive orders, and he lays this out in the book, are to have no weight. They can't even give guidance because it's up to the individual Treasury officer to enforce the law as he sees fit. And it's not up to Hamilton as the Secretary of the Treasury to instruct him how to enforce the law. That's how.
You know, I have one experience with administrative law, and I can't even remember what I've challenged so much crap doing so much stuff. I remember I had my restaurant. I'm not sure if it was something to do with the restaurant or, you know, God knows. But I challenged something. Their administrative have said you got to have something. And I said, well, I want to challenge this. And I go, and the guy kind of like, oh, I don't even remember if he put on a robe or what. But he go into some conference room, he sits down, and he goes, yeah, you know, whatever, bang. I say you're guilty because I can, and you're done. And I'm going, well, I'm going, oh, it's a kangaroo thing. Okay, I get it, you know.
You nailed it. That's the kangaroo court.
So I could challenge a lot of this stuff, but I'm just like, you know, where I may have to focus and go back. When I go back to Arizona, you know, a year from now we'll be back in Arizona, you know, kind of, you know, starting to take what we've learned on the road and, you know, and starting, we want to live there. We got grandkids there and so on. So we're going to go back and I got to clean up something. I got to make sure people, I use all these resources to make sure the people in Arizona understand what's up, you know, but I need to understand what's up before I can even do that. And to coming down to property rights, the land, I'm going, how in the hell did this become not my land? So I'm going, you know, the administrative law part, I need to know what question to ask and whether even to do shepherdizing on it on precedents on law cases. You know, I just put in administrative law challenge, constitution administrative law. What's the question I would even ask?
Just type in Chevron deference and you'll start down a whole rabbit hole, like you like to say, that gets into the whole administrative state and to where our executive branch, our law enforcement branch, those who give you a citation, a summons, are the ones carrying on their own courts as if we're still under military law, military rule, dictatorship. We are in martial law right now and have been. For when a branch of military is bringing charges against civilians and prosecuting them for years and years and years for things like, quote unquote, being depressed, we're in martial law. We're already there. They've taken military law, Title 10 UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military Justice, out of the Department of Defense. It's a weapon. It's a military tool that they're now applying to civilians. And it starts small, like you know everything. It starts with one little
incident. This is how it describes it. And you put it in, it blows up all over the place. Chevron deference is a principle of administrative law requiring courts to defer to interpretations of statutes made by those government agencies charged with enforcing them.
That makes the executive branch over and control our judiciary. They have more.
No, this is BS right here. All right, man, I'm with you on this one, brother. You know, is a requiring the courts to defer to interpretations of statutes by government agencies. Man, if that isn't a template for BS.
But those are rules, not statutes. They're interpreting, making up rules.
Okay.
Usually what Congress does is they pass an enabling act.
All right. We're going into break. We'll be right back with some more info.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, with Eric Schein. Let me tell you, the ones that won't leave me alone, I'm starting to see how they're not leaving me alone a little bit more here. Okay. So this is one thing, you know, that I know it's of great importance to Eric, and he knew this would be a big deal and that I should understand it. I'm starting to get it now. All right. Today, this was in May of 12. Justia law blog, you know, by David Kemp, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was in 12 that there were two cases that came out and they explained the Chevron deference thing. And what it comes down to is that they punt and they go, it may have violated that, you know, but you know, they're a federal agency in charge of enforcing and administering, and we just let them take care of it. And the thing is that makes them enforcers and judges at the same time. Yeah, that's like a separation of power thing. That's executive and judicial.
And legislature, because that rule becomes law.
Yeah, I'm like, this is not right. You know, somebody should be challenging this. Well, they do. So they come in and they try and bring, you know, this one case, Astru versus Capato. What it was is they does a child under the Social Security Act include a child conceived through in vitro fertilization after the husband's death? Well, they go, you know what? We're going to punt to the Social Security Administration. Oh, you guys decide. And they go, we say it doesn't, and, you know, okay, life sucks. And, you know, so did the court decide anything? No. They decided that we're not going to decide. We punt it to the administrative law. Then there was another one on immigration thing. We punt to that. So the thing is that what this winds up being, if you're on the left or the right, you have immigration law comes down to who runs the Board of Immigration. So yes. That becomes the president, executive order. You don't like it. Sucks to be you. Go ahead and file suit, and the Supreme Court's going to go, hey, Board of Immigration's in charge of bite me, which means that President Trump or President Biden or President Obama or President whoever the hell is going to be setting law, having it administered, and them judge, you know, themselves on how they administered it. And then in Eric's case, there was a law enforcement guy, an officer that challenged him on something. They're trying to get him for him whistleblowing of whatever. They send him to law school. He, you know, goes and gets his degree, comes back and takes on the case because he was a willing participant in this thing. So they have the very cop that did it now becomes the prosecutor. Well, hell, that's what they've been the whole time anyway. You know, so I'm going, okay, I'm starting to see this is how your land doesn't become your land anymore, and you have no recourse.
Well, and one of the things at issue was not just my naval commission, which is important, top secret security clearance, but my merchant marine license. They refer to it as a Coast Guard license, but it's really not. It's a officer in the United States Merchant Marine, but the Coast Guard is the administrative agency that issues these licenses. They do the testing. The Merchant Marine Act of 1936 that created my academy at Kings Point, the United States Merchant Marine Academy in New York, states in it that officers in the United States Merchant Marine are equal to Coast Guard officers, meaning that we're not supposed to be like, if an Army officer comes up against a Navy officer, they're not supposed to get into it. They're supposed to, you know, hey, respect, you know, the other service and not, you know, go toe-to-toe or anything. But this is where the Coast Guard is saying that I'm a civilian. They stripped me of my naval commission to do this. They actually wrote a letter to the Navy, the Coast Guard did, Lieutenant Commander Kummerfeld. She wrote a letter to the Navy to get me kicked out, saying that I had issues with authority. So wow. They stripped me of my naval commission, much like they did to a guy, the police officer out here, Dorner, the guy who went crazy and shot up a bunch of people and whatever. And I'm not trying to marry myself to that or whatever, because I've tried to make sure that I contest this and stand up against this in a civil fashion and proper manner, going on the radio, doing TV programs, radio programs, whatever I can to get word out so people understand that we're in martial law. We have the military.
Who would be, when they do martial law and they, you know, it seems that even when they rule it unconstitutional in Michigan, you got some local guys going to tell you. So I'm wondering.
Well, you saw what happened with those guys that were going to grab Whitmer or whatever too, right?
Barely.
I don't remember. There's a whole little conspiracy about.
But they always make this stuff up.
They're idiots and whatever. The guy that actually headed it, and this goes to like McVeigh and others and other.
Was an informant or an instigator.
He was an FBI employee.
Yeah, no, it's always. We went through this in Arizona. I get right. it. You know, I just. So when they come up with something like this, I'm going, how convenient. And they always have. And it was interesting. It was always Georgia, Arizona, Montana, Michigan. Georgia, Arizona, Montana, Michigan. I think Ohio a couple times. It was a round robin.
Right.
They just kept, you know, doing it. I mean, so it doesn't surprise me one bit. You know, this has been a, I don't want to hang up. It's my son-in-law. Grab it. Take it. So I'm starting to understand this, that it's something I need to look at when I got time. So for the audience, administrative law, you know, this is, I'm really looking, because we did the same thing on the land thing. We found out a bunch of stuff, but the use of administrative law needs some attention.
Okay, real quick, and this kind of goes to the issue. I asked that the proceedings be recorded in audio-visual format. They would not allow it. They were afraid for their own safety, which is like, what? Why would you be afraid for your own safety? I had to point out in the transcripts of the record verbally, because it was not recorded audio-visual, that the man standing next to me at the prosecution table was a JAG officer in uniform of the Coast Guard. That was, I even asked him, I said, are you guys a branch of military? Yes, we are. How is this an Article 32 charge? Yes, it is. And I'm like, what? And they're saying that I'm a civilian. They're not only alleging and putting in the record that they see me as a civilian, that they've identified me as a civilian, but they made me into a civilian and were instrumental in stripping me from my naval commission.
Because they can.
Well, because people don't complain. People don't stand up. People
well, have you challenged in all of this? Have you challenged it on the basis of administrative law even existing? I mean, has that ever come up?
When it went to the Ninth Circuit, and this is a whole story in and of itself, I initially had a Coast Guard ALJ named Jesse Massey, who was fired by the Coast Guard.
It's ALJ, what's an ALJ?
Administrative law judge. Right. They're a hearing officer. They're a police commissioner. They're the ones who hear your cases in the executive branch.
Yeah.
Not in the judiciary. It's such a gross violation of the separation of powers, and they've hoodwinked us. I mean, even like I said, in traffic court, to where you have to ask to see a real judge because the police have two more shots at you before they get to make, not just get money from you, fines, fees, whatever, but then use your case to make new law. They use rules. That's why they call them rulers. They're tyrants. They're kings. They're using rules to make law. That's not how our system works. Our legislature, state and or federal, is supposed to draft, deliberate, and pass the laws, vote on them. The president goes ahead and signs them. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're using the executive branch, these police commissions, to craft rules. They had a general rule of incompetence. So they used me and basically condemned me to make new rules and define what incompetence meant by prosecuting me and using military personnel to do it.
This is interesting. I understand why you're so passionate about it, and you want the people to understand what's going on. You got just
who's involved?
You got a minute, man. Tell me how this is going to manifest in this election, after the election, the future of what?
Ted Olson is involved. Ted Olson was involved with 9/11. The very judge that sat on my case sat on the 9/11 trust fund for the family members of 9/11. He's tied to Feinberg. Olson, his wife, Barbara Olson, is on one of the planes. These people have their hands in everything going on, whether it's 9/11, COVID-19.
Okay, we're going into music. They're not able to hear you that well. We're going to go a couple of extra minutes after this where we get L. Neal on. But, yeah, just, you know, I need to, you know, I'll talk to Eric about this and what kind of focus that I'd like to go forward, because I may be willing to challenge something here. I mean, it's not like I haven't done it before, you know, but I need to do it in Arizona, because this thing, challenging this very concept, is what gets a lot of attention and understanding. It's a people thing. They need to know, you know, how are you being screwed? Like this. Okay. Well, that sucks. Yep. What are we going to do about it? I don't know. We're going to find out. I think. All right, here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
beard and a 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 beard here on Declare Your Independence from here in Stancock, here in Bangor, Maine. Still probably, you know, if not today, this evening, we may, you know, go, I don't know. But it's going to be today, tomorrow at the latest. We get her done, get going. We're, and in our travels, you know, Fort Collins, Colorado is where my good friend and, you know, mentor, L. Neil Smith is, and we might get to go by and say, yo, what's up? So we're going to do that, hopefully. Now, L. Neil Smith is, I got bio here on him and all his whatever, but I just rather, all right, I'll read his bio, and then I'll give my personal bio. Award-winning novelist and essayist L. Neil Smith is a retired gunsmith, former reserve police officer, and Eagle Scout. You're an Eagle Scout. You know, I want to talk about that a little bit, too. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
And publisher, senior columnist of L. Smith's The Libertarian Enterprise. He is the author of over 30 books and thousands of columns and articles, fiercely defending individual rights, fighting the continuing war against tyranny since the mid-60s. Look him up on every search engine and wiki and this and that, whatever, and his stuff blows up all over the place. Just go L. Neil, N-E-I-L, Smith. L. Neil Smith. You know, that's the initial L. L. And I call him L. Neil because I can't. The jpfo.org and .ncc-1776.org. It's kind of a, you know, ode to enterprise. Or at Patreon. He's got L. Neil Smith there over on Patreon. He lives in Fort Collins, Colorado, with his wife, Kathy, his daughter, best known to the internet as Gio, and two cats, Pablo and Strider. All right. This is my experience with L. Neil. Just real quick. We talked about it before, and I just want to give you, you know, how I know L. Neil. And when was the Libertarian National Convention in Salt Lake? Was that 92 or 90?
I think it was 95, but I'm not sure.
It was before that, because we had gotten a copy of the speech, and maybe it was about 95. Anyway, we had our workshop, the Maricopa County Libertarian Headquarters, and some of the guys, you know, I think it was Rick and Kathy, went, and we went and visited Rick, this last spring. We got to say, yo, what's up? He is now in North Carolina, and he had gone to the convention, and L. Neil was a presenter, a speaker there, and he got a copy of his speech. And the speech was, you know, and he had a phrase in there, you know, those Nerf libertarians with their foam core platform, you know. And I'm like, oh, he knows what's up, you know. So he was a Rothbardian hardcore 70s on the Libertarian National Committee, heavy in trying to keep in it hardcore. And then the Coke-to-Puss thing that's going on and blah, 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 blah. Man, if that didn't rear its head this year, too. So I'm going, you know, L. Neil had this hardcore approach to everything, and it made it into his novel. So we became fans of his novels. So all of us were reading, you know, how you would, you know, take these policies and this no compromise, and it would be implemented, you know, not only in your life but into the future, and how it would have an award-winning books, you know, getting the Prometheus Award for Probability Broach. I mean, go on and on and on, and a lot of his, you know, books. I even got a character in a book or two, so that's cool. So this is how influential he'd been on us. And sometimes you hear me talking about Freedom 101. Freedom 101 by Ernest Hancock, and it'll come up. And it came from all these sayings, these aphorisms that he had that were parts of chapters and books that the publisher took out. But he took those and he put them in, you know, if you're not at least a little uncomfortable with your position and isn't radical enough, how can you be too principled? Take the most extreme position you can. You'll be claiming territory you won't have to fight for later, mostly with your allies. Well, you can, you know, parse that out and define. I can do a whole speech on just that. But the thing is, you know, the louder they scream, you know, the more you know you're doing them harm, and you know, and argue with the guy. You may not change him, but you know, the spectators get a view. I mean, there's many of these, and he wrote an article about the Vulcan mind meld into the state about gun control. Well, I asked his permission. I said, hey, can I, that article, I want to take and plagiarize a snot out of that. I got an opportunity to write a guest article in the main newspaper, the Arizona Republic in Arizona. And we were challenging a bunch of stuff. And I'm going to customize that. And he goes, yeah, go for it. What was amazing is a bunch of people that contacted, hey, you ripped that off of Al New. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. You know, and he gave me permission. So this is, you know, the impact that he has had on our life. But the impact we've had on El Neal has been that we actually did what he said. You know, a lot of people didn't take it seriously or do like the Ron Paul evolution and a lot of the stuff that we took these methods and taking it to the street and making them say it. You know, this came from an outline that L. Neal Smith in his novels and his advocacy and his confidence and how this stuff works is what made us, made me. The kind of activist that I am, we kind of were that way anyway, but it helped to be, you know, have it articulated and be able to have it and, hell, read this book and you'll get it by L. Neal Smith. That long introduction is so you understand how important this guy is to what we're doing, our life, our activism, and what we're doing on the Love Bus and everything. You know, they had a book called It Usually Begins with Ayn Rand. Well, for us, it began with L. Neal Smith. I mean, he knows a lot of others, but big influence. Welcome to the show, El Neal.
Thank you, Ernie. You're extremely kind.
Hey, Don, but, did you hear that? He said, I'm extremely kind.
But you're the reason, I think, more than anything else, that I wanted to be the president of Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, you're, is this thing on? Yeah, you're free. I'm going golfing. That's what will happen. You know, this, yeah, we can go on about so many stories, you know, El Neal and I, but a lot of what's going on now is, and you read his novels and so on, they started like after this happened, you know, or in prelude to it happening, or references to this kind of stuff. So when you look at the news and everything that's going on now, you're like, yeah, well, what'd you think was going to happen? I mean, what's your commentary on this year's election cycle and the COVID, and that we haven't talked during since all this started. We only got about a minute till the break. So kind of
okay,
give me
I've
a
written about this
intro.
A lot. I think we have a communist revolution happening.
Yep. That's it. Skip to the end.
Yeah.
All right. So we got about a minute and a half and then we'll come back. But this communist revolution is, you know, Russia do it? I mean, you know, who's doing it?
No, I think mainly behind it is China. But they have allies here called the Democrat Party.
Yeah. And, well, your book, Down with Power, you know, just to give a quickie on that, people go look it up.
Well, I wanted to write an alternative to, I mean, the one year the politicians raped the platform of the Libertarian Party. So I wrote a new platform, a very long one. And since I wrote that book, I've changed my mind about a couple of issues. But mostly it's what I believe politically and philosophically.
I'm down. Well, I mean, the title kind of, you know, says it, you know. But I got a bunch of questions. We're going to rapid fire on El Neal when we come back. You know, but I want you guys to understand the importance of just philosophy and thinking, you know, and what he got from, you know, he's a contemporary of Rothbard, you know, that was a big influence on him. And we got an inside look at the Libertarian Party and the struggles and what's been happening, you know. So El Neal definitely has he was on the ballot for president in Arizona, him and Vince Brenowitz.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
With El Neal Smith, and don't tell Dr. Frank Tamburi what El Neal Smith's about going to say. He'll just beat me over the head with it. I just know, all right, El Neal, Mr. Super Libertarian, you know, big influence on me and family and did and that, whatever. Are you going to vote this year?
Yes, I am.
Who are you going to vote for?
I'm going to vote for Donald Trump.
Oh! You're still voting? Okay. All right. Tell me why, man. Give what for?
He's not a libertarian, but he's taking us further along the trail toward a libertarian society than any other president or presidential candidate in history. And also, you were talking about his rallies when in the break, and the fact is everybody is happy at those damn rallies. I mean,
true.
They're just grinning themselves to death. I sit and watch them on TV, and I actually enjoy them very much. I know what he's going to say, but I'm happy to have him say it.
Yeah. No, it was last spring, you know, whenever. We went to a Trump thing. And it was the year before. And my granddaughter, my son brought my granddaughter, and he's all QAnon'd up. I hear your daughter is, you know, kind of whatever. And that's another psyop. I don't know if it's good guys, bad guys, but it's definitely, you know, propaganda. But and it's probably, I mean, how much true, whatever, I don't care. But I can't get any of these guys to come on. I even had a guy scheduled a couple weeks ago, and he just kept flaking off. But we went, and it was, you know, blacks for Trump, Hispanics for Trump, people for Trump, Democrats for Trump, 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 down, I mean, it was like a mile line to get in, and people outside, and the excitement was, but my son took his keys, and he kind of made a cue out of one of the signs, and then put my granddaughter on his shoulders, and she held it up, and the Secret Service came and took it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm going, it means something, don't it? You know, yeah, what's that about? So then, but it was talking with the people, you're right. It was very upbeat, and people love the fact that he just trashes the fake news. I mean, they're back there, and they got to cover them. They don't like it. So these guys are out. So who do you think is going to benefit the most, and who's going to be, you know, outed in the swamp? Because I'm not seeing, you know, like challenging Federal Reserve or any. At least he didn't start a war, you know. But give us your defense of Trump.
Well, Trump has spent his first term in office mired down in. I mean, people supposedly on his own side are actually against him and stuff like that. It's taken him a while to get rid of those and get people who will actually work for him. So, you know, it was a pretty busy term, but I think the second term is going to be interesting. There are 200,000 sealed indictments sitting ready to...
that's what I keep hearing. You know, I keep going to my son going, yeah, when? You know?
I don't know, but the first of them have I don't know what you call what a verb is for an indictment, but some of them have been used already. And then there's the whole human trafficking thing, and Ghislaine Maxwell and Google just got filed against. Did you know that?
Against them for what? Google got filed what?
Antitrust.
Okay, they got filed against by Barr or something?
And you know, normally I wouldn't care for that. I don't like those laws, but in this case, they deserved it. They asked for it.
Okay, Donna, look up Google antitrust. They just filed something, Google antitrust. Yeah, I'm not a, you know, whatever. You know, this is just, we're doing internet, you know, three-point kiss my butt, IPFS stuff we're working on. It doesn't matter anymore.
I do go myself.
Well, this is okay. So, do you think Trump is going to be good for freedom in what way? What is he going to do? He's going to get rid of Federal Reserve?
He'll continue to lower taxes and get rid of regulations. And I think he's going to make a move on the Federal Reserve. Well, actually, he already has. He declared some of it to be government property, whereas it used to be all private. So, I don't know what all is going to happen. I can't predict the future. And it's hard to predict a man like Trump. He's a man of action rather than explanation. But I know that his first term was very good for my family. And
in what way? I think, taxes?
Taxes and other things, the lack of regulations. So, you know, I just feel happier. I mean, you talked about Ronald Reagan and the feeling that people had when he was president. Yeah. I remember when Barry Goldwater ran for office, And what a swell thing that was. People, you know, who went to see Goldwater felt the same way that they feel now when they go to see Trump, except that Trump actually wins, you know. And he was up against the same evil forces, Goldwater, that Trump is, but Trump squashes them. And I enjoyed that very much. I remember in the 60s listening to Walter Cronkite talking about gun ownership in a very insulting way. And finally, the fake news media is getting theirs.
Yeah, that's... I'm regardless of what happens, I don't see the news media surviving or being the same. I don't know what they're going to do. But when the printed newspapers started going out, what did they do? You know, all of a sudden, you know, Gannett or USA Today or whatever bought the Arizona Republic and to lose money. Why? It's just for general public opinion of contract of whatever corporation mm-hmm. or something. You know, I don't really know what use that the media has anymore. But of course, what do? You know, like you're talking about this antitrust with Google thing, they use in social media to try and propagandize us. You think the people are getting smarter and more savvy after they lock them
down? Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. You know, it's interesting. When newspapers began to fail, my wife and I talked about buying a local newspaper that was in some trouble, and it didn't turn out to be practical, so that's how the Enterprise was born. And it's been online for 26 years.
You know, I check it almost every day. You know, whenever you write something new, boom, goes on Freedom's Phoenix. This is how it goes.
Yeah, every Sunday, that's when the new stuff comes out.
Oh, is that how that works? Okay, I was wondering. All right.
Yeah.
You know,
I was going to say, Kenny goes to press Saturday night, and then Sunday morning I get up and I read the Enterprise.
Very cool. You know,
I wish we had Sunday funnies. Wouldn't that be great?
You know, I tried to get, we have some cartoons up there, you know, yeah. You know, Scott Beezer, you know, we run his stuff and everything. I'd like to have a daily something. That'd be great, you know, to have that, you know, freedom. Now it's called memes. I mean, you know, it's Family Circle for Freedom. I mean, so we're going to talk more El Neal when we come back in just a little bit. What's the future? You know, well, that's what El Neal did. He takes, you know, the news of the day, writes a novel, and says, let me explain it to you. Well, he can explain it to us, because here it comes. We'll be right back. El Neal Smith.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And El Neal Smith, you know, Mr. Trump defender, you know, it's going to be, you know, I am so going to get a ration of crap Thursday. You know, so this is, see, my thing is I'm just like, whatever. You know, I'm not advocating anybody rule me either way. But, you know, when Thanksgiving after he got elected, I remember Dr. Frank goes, come on. You are thankful it's not Hillary, right? I go, okay, I'll give you that one. But, you know.
That's true. That's true. I remember that feeling.
You know, well, this is, what do you think, you know, all the polls and everything, you know, Biden's like 97%, man. He's going to win. You're wasting your vote. What do you think?
I think that Donald Trump's going to win in a landslide this time.
Yeah, if they let him. You know me, man. I don't trust the election process itself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I share your trepidation.
You know, this is getting, well, you know, some of the things that's coming up I wanted to talk to you about. They have Trudeau in Canada. You talked in the break. You didn't know about it, but they're building concentration camps for those refuseniks of vaccine mask, whatever the hell. You know, of course, they're going to use it for whatever they want. But, you know, you think that's coming to America? Or we already got them or what?
It better not come to America. I mean, there are people willing to fight right now. Canadians aren't. They're Canadians. They're very polite, right?
I don't know, man. Right up until they're not. You know, one thing that was interesting, a stat that you probably already know that kind of really got me, I think of you when they say it. There are more hunting licenses in America than all the world's armies combined. And they're all snipers.
That's true. I saw a poster yesterday that said China has an army of 2.5 million guys under arms. The United States has an army of 70 million.
Yeah, that's why it's been a target. And the Democrats, you know, whoever the hell they are, have made it very clear. They want to take away all the guns, man. You're so
I have a long essay on the Enterprise front page called Why Americans Have Obeyed Their Last Gun Law. And
that's an old one, though, right?
Yeah, it's really old, but I need to update it because I think it was written during the Obama administration. But people are fed up, you know. I mean, instead of figuring out, you know, how they're going to meekly turn their guns over to the cops, they're finding out places they can bury them and things.
Yeah, I had, you know, my mindset has been, you know, do you fight? And I'm like, fight who? I mean, you know, what am I fighting? You know, it's going to be, you know, I have no idea. What are we doing? We're going to go be in charge of the marble in Washington?
Do you know who A.W.R. Hawkins is?
No.
He's the gun guy at Breitbart. And he says what they're going to do is they're going to call AR-15s and anything else they don't like NFA 34 items, in other words, like machine guns. And you have to pay a $200 fee and get a license and be photographed, fingerprinted. And they're going to do the same thing with each and every high-capacity magazine you own.
Yeah, I remember when they started Sandy Hook and they wanted to do the 30-round magazine capacity limit, and they dent the 10 in some state and all that kind of crap. And
15 in Colorado, yeah.
Well, we have a file for a 30-round magazine 3D printed. You know, it has safe on it. You know, Cody Wilson did that for me and put the safe on the thing, and I got the file put out bit toward it. That's the only thing I ever bit toward. You know, just to get it out there, and it's there, and it's a 3D printed magazine with safe on it. Boom. Second amendment
for an AR.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, so this is, I tell you, all right, here's you'll be very not proud of me. On the Love Bus, we're going around the country. You look at the gun laws, and I give them a freebie, man. I have any gun that I'm going through Massachusetts and New York or whatever. So I figured because Biden said it's okay, and you look at some of the laws, what you can get away with, I got a 12-gauge pump shotgun, you know, with the ammunition out of it separate in a box underneath the couch. That's the only firearm I have on the bus. Aren't you proud of that? No.
Well, I have a special problem because, as you know, I had a stroke in 2014. I can't use my left hand. So my assault rifle is a long slide Glock 10mm.
There you go. Well, you know, you're sounding good. You know, last time we talked, your speech was a little bit more impaired. You know, it sounded like you're doing a lot better. How you feeling?
Well, physically, I feel very well. I'm working and writing, and actually, I have always lived the life of the mind. And so the wheelchair thing, it's less burdensome to me than it might be to a basketball player, you know?
Yeah. And you're 74, did you say 2 or 4?
74.
74. Hey, man, I got president in 74.
I'm one of the original baby boomers, if you think about it. They started in 1946.
Well, you know, what do you got some optimism now. Do we got to go through the crap? I'm like, yeah, in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first. You know, how messy you think it's going to get?
Well, I think it'll start messy. I mean, there'll be more of the same, you know, murder and, you know, robbery and burning. But in the second term, Trump will not be limited the way he has been. And there is the Insurrection Act. And me, I wouldn't mess with the federal marshals. I'd send in the Marines.
To where? To what? For what?
To Seattle, to Portland, to places like that.
Yeah, let them rot, man. You know, it's a governor's. He wanted them to do. They wanted them to get all, let's go whip ass. But, you know, he's like, yeah, ask me and I will. I'm not going to come I'll defend the federal court like I care. But, you know, I think he handled. That's one thing. You know, Trump always handles these. He's kind of reactionary, and you can depend on him to do something. you know. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'm not reactionary, and what I'm interested in is not saving the city of Seattle. I'm interested in saving civilization. So I would act if I were doing it, but it's a good thing I'm not doing it, I guess.
No, because it's plugged into the phone. Yeah, we're not, you know, hearing you on the stream, you know, because no. It's okay. We'll just turn the stream off because they're not doing it. It's on the network, you know, because we're doing bus stuff, man. We're finally back into the bus just today, you know, using the thing. We're like testing on you, but the yeah, you can just stop that. It doesn't matter. They're sitting there looking at my face, but the yeah, we got it all recorded and videoed and everything, and it'll go up in the archive. But the I wanted to make sure that we talked to you. I'm glad you're sounding so much better. You know,
well,
and,
thank you.
You know, and so how's your mind? You know, on typing, are you clear? You can you know, put it down when you want.
Yeah, typing one-handed is a pain in the ass, but everything else is very clear, and I write.
Well, they got voice recognition software, Holmes.
No, I can't do it because I have to go back. I go back again and again to fix the paragraph. So I write, and I write at least 1,000-word essay every week, and I'm working on my books. And sometimes I do better than that. This last issue of the Enterprise, I have 3 pieces in it, plus a letter to the editor.
Yeah. Well, so what is your activism these days? You know, letters to the editor? You know, doing your site? What up?
My activism consists of the essays I write for the Libertarian Enterprise. And then on Sunday afternoon, I will pass many of them along to Facebook, although I'm thinking of leaving Facebook. There's something new being set up. I don't remember what they called it. And I'm thinking about joining that. So we'll see.
Well, you know, we have in the news here, one thing I want to get your comment on is you being a Trump fan and everything. We got all these entertainers, you know, a lot of times, you know, like Kanye West and 50 Cent. 50 Cent mm-hmm. is endorsing yeah. Trump. And I'm going, so the black, I'm wondering how they're twisting this on race. We're going to find out when we come back with L. Neal Smith. This is, it's surprising to me that he's so openly in support of Trump, but why? What is, you know, I feel good about it. You know, because he's going, the same people that hate him, I hate, so screw him. You know what? You know, 2020 Trump, because F you again.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
You don't need no stinking row ads. And I tell you what, you know, it had a big influence on me in the Probability Brooch, a book written by L. Neal in the late 70s. It was, you know, like the Libertarian Party was called, like, propertarians, okay? It was all about property rights. Yeah, I remember. And then, you know, when there was a divergence in the timeline from, like, the Declaration of Independence, and you'll skip to the end, you know, I'll be a spoiler for you. It was one word. It was the unanimous consent of the governed. They took that out. Well, we can't have unanimous. So back and forth, well, one had unanimous consent and one didn't. The one that didn't were in Communistville. Now, you read Probability Brooch, and you can see, man, we're living it right now. This is what he described as right now. The other one, you know, they had unanimous. During the Whiskey Rebellion, they didn't give up. And it went on, and they hung Washington for being, you know, a traitor to the Revolution and all.
Actually,
that.
They shot him, but that's all right.
Yeah, whatever. He was not breathing. So this is, you know, clairvoyance that he had on this of what's coming. And I'm going, you know, I'm just not, you know, going out and we're going to have us a revolution and a civil war, you know, beat up and shoot people for what? That so I can be in charge of, you know, the monuments in D.C. or something? I don't care. You know, so, I mean, what are we, you know, doing? You know, what are you advocating?
Oh, well, I advocate using force to resist force. But the long-term problem is a psychological one. There are reasons people become collectivists, and it's a kind of mental illness that can be attacked, you know. You know, I don't know if you know it, but the founders of BLM are buddies of Nicolas Maduro. had a photograph of one of the founders of BLM hugging Maduro.
What? All right, you're talking about the Bureau of Land Management and Maduro.
No.
Oh, Black Lives Matter. Okay.
Yeah.
Crap. I was
the
like,
same mistake all
I
the
mean,
time.
Yeah, I know. I'm going, you know, what the heck? All right, Maduro, the Venezuela guy, right?
Yeah, communist dictator of Venezuela.
All right,
yeah.
All right. Yeah, you know, that, yeah, no. You remember, you know, the Weathermen or Weather Underground or whatever the heck it was, and all and now they get pardoned by Clinton, and now they're in charge of Black Lives. I mean, this is not a secret. They're not even hiding from it.
Actually, I think that Obama was a Soviet sleeper agent, and unfortunately, the Soviets went away. But he was nurtured by people from the Weather Underground.
And
Bill Ayers and people. Bill Ayers and people like that.
You know, this is why I tell Dr. Frank, we do the Trump report all the time. I said, you know what, blah, blah, blah. I'm just waiting for Trump, the movie. I it's going to have to be a big series. You know, what are some of the things that would come out that you would think that would be of interest to most people?
Oh, I don't know. They have to look far and wide to find a leading lady as beautiful as a real person.
Wow, really? Yeah. I remember during the campaign in 16, I don't know who did this. They were trying to make out like the Democrats were doing it, but they go, she'd be posed in lingerie or something when she was a model, and they go, do you want this as your first lady? And I'm like,
sure do.
Damn, Skippy. That's a dumb question. I was like, what?
Yeah, I have some pictures from early in her career. My favorite is she's in a bikini sliding along the wing of a small aircraft with a .45 in her hand.
What? All right. We got to look that up. Melania, .45, Cal, bikini. Wing, bikini. Man, if that doesn't bring it up, I don't know what would. You know, that's another thing. What about search engines and so on? What do you think about the internet now? Which he described in Probability Broach in the late 70s.
It's I did.
Yes, you did. You know, L. Neal invented it.
I did not describe the kind of tyranny we're suffering right now. I think in the long run, competition will fix it. But in the short run, I think they've gone far enough that antitrust is called for. And, in fact, if you check out the linkages that they have with the Chinese Communist government, I think jail time for the heads of Facebook and Twitter and Google.
Yeah. Yeah, it was you. Yeah, you just told me that they're doing antitrust against Google. I'm like, all right, go get some, man, you know. What do you think is going to be the result? Because I don't care. They want to be private, do whatever the heck you want. You know, I don't give a crap. But that's not what the problem is. They get subsidized, they get help, nobody else can compete. It's so much crap on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, they have renounced everything that we think of as American. And they are more Soviet style, and I want to see them done. I want to see them bankrupt. I want to see them begging for nickels in a tin cup in the street.
Well, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, you know, it's going to have to. All right. This is what, when you and I, you know, first were working together and doing different stuff, and you go to Arizona and see us implementing of, you know, your philosophy and being buttheads. And, you know, I'm going, I'm not really thinking I'm going to change them. It's just so the people know, and I made them say it, you know, say it, you know, and then when they realize and understand what's coming and what's going on, then what? You know, we're going to have a government, go down to the state, we still counting on the Constitution, what?
Well, I think that it's going to come down to the Constitution being the supreme law of the land once again, because people insist on it. We have to insist on it. And, as far as the current tech giants are concerned, I think ultimately they're going to be swamped by competition. I just heard of a conservative social media being set up yesterday. I don't remember the name, unfortunately. But they're going to have their own thing like Facebook, plus they're going to have a search engine. So something like USA1776.org or something.
Really? You know, there's going to be, it's not going to be the same, you know, but I'm, in all of the stuff that you've written and everything that you've done, you're advocating for what? I mean, when you share your view of the future, what are you trying to instill in people? Hope? I mean, what?
I'm trying to instill the idea that nobody has the right to tell anybody else what to do and make it stick.
You know, I found your picture, you know, that her on the wing of the truck with the gun.
Oh.
And then over her body, it says, this image has been made cause safe, whatever the hell that means.
Oh, God.
Yeah, she's got a 45 outreach for the sun gun. Awesome. Awesome. This is, God, man, the internet has gotten so sucky. You know, it was so much better before. This is, did you anticipate this kind of controls?
I certainly didn't, and I want to impose a new rule, which is no censorship of any kind is tolerable.
Well, that's kind of where we're at in a lot of the stuff that we're doing. As a matter of fact, we've been really focusing on that last few years, and it's called interplanetary file sharing, to where we can put up whatever, and it's there forever, and there's nothing to do about it. You know, next. You know, so we're working on it for you, El Neil, man. We got covered.
There are lots of people in other countries, too, who are working on it. So,
yeah, we just did a podcast yesterday, or, you know, a Zoom with a young man from Switzerland that had a bunch of stuff working on this. And we're doing tomorrow night, James Corbett and I do a show out of Australia on this, because we did his website, you know, all IPFS, because we can. And
I think a lot of hope ahead for those folks. I like Australia very much.
Well, what did they do? They disarmed them, and then they freaking martial law them or whatever.
Yeah. Well, they know, the ones who have brains know, that their continued survival depends on the United States. Otherwise, they're going to all be speaking Chinese. And the current left-wing governments in Australia will go away.
Well, you know, does that include, like, Canada, New Zealand, South Africa?
Canada's a mess. You know, I grew up in Canada.
Really?
And, yeah. And it has a whole bunch of kind of architectural problems. One of them is the sovereignty of the Queen.
Yeah, the Queen's Privy Council. Well, we're in the final music. I can't probably hear you very well, but hold on a second. And what we'll do is we'll continue this for a couple of minutes and with L. Neil Smith for the archive, because, you know, we just want to spend some extra time without worrying about a break all the time. We'll be right back, you know, tomorrow morning, and then tomorrow evening, James Corbett and I will be doing a show in Australia on MyPFF. You know, I think the solution to a lot of this stuff, at least competition with what we got now. Internet 3-point kiss my butt. Be right back.